Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Joint Planning Board, Kingston Historic Landmarks Preservation Commission, and Heritage Area Commission special meeting. We will begin the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. The flag is behind the screen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we're going to start out with introductions of the three boards. We'll start with the Planning Board. My name is Wayne Platt, Jr. I'm the chairman. We also have Robert Jacobson, Mary Jo Wiltshire, Matt Gillis, and we have Suzanne Cahill, who is the planning director. Kyla Dede is the assistant planner. And we have senior clerk Donna Brady. We have Julie Edelson Safford, Alderman Reynolds Scott Childress. Is Patrick O'Reilly here, Alderman O'Reilly? Okay. They are common council liaisons. We also have Daniel Gartenstein, the assistant corporation counsel. And I'm going to hand it off to Historic Landmarks, Mark Rumblatt.
Hi, I'm Mark Rumblatt. I chair Historic Landmarks Preservation Commission. The commissioners here this evening are me, Hayes Clement directly to my right, Peter DeMuth over here, and Andrea Pute to my left, and now off to Heritage Area.
My name is Hayes Clement. I'm the chairman of the Heritage Area Commission. With us tonight from the commission are Bonnie Rutsky, who's our vice chair, Abigail Robin, Bernie Matthews. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Some housekeeping issues. Exits are at either side of the council chambers. If there's an emergency, we're going to use the stairs and not the elevator. Bathrooms are to the door to my right. I ask folks to silence their cell phones, and if there's a conversation that needs to happen, there are two conference rooms that you can take that to. And we ask that folks respect the speakers. We'll begin tonight with the open public speaking. It's a 15-minute allocation time. Doesn't necessarily have to do with anything that's on our agenda. Just wanted to let folks know that any comments tonight are not going to be part of the official record, as this is not a public hearing. It also is not going to be a question and answer session between the public, the applicant, and the board members. And I ask folks to please limit their time at the microphone to 2 minutes. Is there anybody wishing to speak at this time? Hi, just made it, just in time. Come on up. We switched it up a little bit. I don't know if you heard what I on your way up the stairs. Anything that's said tonight is not a public hearing, so it's not part of the official record. Okay.
I know. Sorry. And I'm actually just here to submit some comments on behalf of Marissa Marvelli, who couldn't be here, and I am happy to just give them to you. They have some.
Can you just please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sue. I'm Sarah Wink. I live at 150 Main Street in Kingston. She just sent some notes and some images that she wanted to share with you. And that's
okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Please don't make me pronounce your last name. Go ahead, Getty, for the record.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Getty Schweighuskers, and I'm a neighbor, uptown neighbor, very proud of the area, and I made comments about the Kingstonian project, which are part of the record, and I appreciate your paying attention to those. I pretty much stick to what I said then. In projects like this, nobody gets everything they want. The developer doesn't, the town, the community doesn't, the opponents don't. But what you hope for is a project where you can have something that works for everybody, that is okay. And I think we're sort of searching for that here. You saw the SHPO comments that were made, and I mostly agree with them, but I don't think we should kind of follow everything SHPO wants, nor should we try to defy them just for the hell of it. I think that there's, a ground where we can make the project more consistent with the neighborhood and what it stands for. And it's a delicate matter because we've got a developer who is very keen not to lose money, to make money. And you've got a community that's really concerned about its character, where it's going in the future, and just the general feel of it. I love it there. It's great. How do you get there? Well, in my comments, I didn't try to make the project smaller. I said, well, how can you make it better? And there are various design possibilities that I'm really glad that the planning board seemed to pick up on in your comments. I'm no expert in the traffic patterns. I confine myself to the visual aspect of it for the most part and the community character part of it. You know, that's the part that I'm familiar with. And I do think that that's where improvement is needed. But as I say, I didn't try to make the project smaller because that basically makes it more difficult to have the project happen. So I said, what the best outcome would be, they get the number of units they want, but the project looks like it fits into the neighborhood. And there's a long way to go to get there, but I think it's possible, and I don't think it's a matter of money. Because I do think that there are improvements that will not increase the cost of it, but if they do in a limited way. I even suggested the possibility of a couple more units in exchange for some of these improvements. Like, I'm not sure I like the idea of the front end of it having honest materials and fitting in with the neighborhood, and the back end facing the Kingston Plaza just be kind of what it is. I think improvement is possible there too. But I think what you need really is people who are listening to each other, who are talking to each other. And I'm a little bit upset by the tenor of the conversation that has taken place on both sides. I think that just saying we're against it no matter what and we're going to find new ways of opposing it isn't the right way to go. But saying that these are our financial parameters and we can't give an inch doesn't make sense, particularly if you've not really seen the financial parameters. I think that more information sharing is needed, and then we can see if we can get together. I, for one, can live with the project or without it, but I can't live with a bad project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Getty. Anybody else? Okay, we're closing the public speaking portion. We will now reopen the public speaking portion.
I just want to, hi, Tanya Garment, 102 Wirt Street. Just want to remind you that the HLPC did put in comments early on that we're, I hope that you're, that in the end will be considered as official, because they should be. There's no valid reason for them not to be considered as part of the official record. The HLPC's comments were made before. They tried to get it on the agenda the month before. It was announced publicly that they were to be on the agenda the month before. They discussed it the month after. They put their feedback in for whether the planning board should be lead agency. There's absolutely no reason that their comments should not be considered for the seeker process. And I also wanted to say that the local boundaries of the Stockade District go all the way around to the Schwenk side end of the building. The HLPC oversees that, therefore, so that should be part of the discussion by the HLPC. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, we are closing the public speaking portion. Okay, moving on to item number 2 is 9-17 and 21 North Front Street and 51 Schwenk Drive. This is under old business and a portion of Fair Street Extension. That's a lot line deletion of the lands of Herzog Supply Company and the City of Kingston. Section, block, and lot is 48.80-1-25, 26, and 24.120. Seeker determination, zone C2, mixed-use overlay district. Kingstonian Development LLC is the applicant. Herzog Supply Company Incorporated and City of Kingston are the owners. It's also going to encompass a site plan special permit to construct a mixed-use building with a 420-car garage, 129 apartments, 32 hotel rooms, and 800 square feet of retail space. Okay, so this is a joint meeting between the three boards. The applicants are here, and they will make a joint this joint meeting is taking place so the applicants don't have to make three separate presentations, and the applicants can field questions from all three boards under one roof. So at this time, I'm going to introduce one of the principals of the project, Joe Benura. If you can introduce your team as well. Thank you, sir.
Good evening. Thank you very much. So Joe Benora here. I have Dennis Larios. I have Mike Moriello, Patrick Page, Frank Campagna. We have Brad Jordan, and then we have Steve McKenzie. And so we are very pleased to be here tonight. We have spent the last 3 weeks, well, we had 3 weeks in a row where we're meeting with each of your different commissions and committees and heard comments. And then we took those comments to heart, along with all the other public comments we received. And although we didn't have much time, we only had about a week and a half, we did some pretty significant redesign, which we're happy to show tonight. And what we're going to be showing, I'm going to get Steve McKenzie up here to talk to you about his thinking. Based on all the comments that we've heard, we're going to take you on a little tour. The design images that you're going to see are not by any means final. They are meant to show you where we're going, and I think we've gone a long way. But Steve will get up here and explain things. Is that good? And I'm going to chime in as necessary.
And Joe, these mics are for your team as well here.
I think it's just
the empty
be
mics.
You good with this one? Try it. Yeah, it'll just be us for a while, and if we have more questions, we'll get them up here.
Okay to have water on the table? All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. So we do appreciate all the comments and the feedback that does factor into our thinking, and it really does make a difference. So I hope that'll continue. It's great to see this assemblage as a single group, because I do think that makes for a more efficient process for everybody's benefit. So, as Joe said, we are going to show you a different direction. Part of this is showing you a little bit about the design process, but also about some of the potential we think the project offers. But it's going to be grounded in some fundamentals, starting with, again, how we view the design process, our philosophy, and also the fundamentals in terms of not only the challenges, but the opportunities this site presents. And I would characterize it really not as a building, but as a development, because there are many facets to how this could take shape. So briefly, we use this as kind of a touchstone. This comes right out of the National Guidelines for Historic Preservation. This is part of the application that was approved, I think, back in 75, and when it was later amended to go back to 65. So again, this is our touchstone. Next slide talks about, from a philosophical standpoint, the key drivers of the design. I said before that context is essential and critical to consider, and hopefully that'll come through when you see our approach. Joe, back one. I also added another quote from Charles Eames, who's a fantastic designer, and again, it touches on the comment I said about constraints. So what's important, again, is that we hear from you whatever your concern or comment is, and we've heard a lot of good comments from everybody. Some, of course, we agree with, others we don't, but that's okay, that's healthy. I think that tension actually leads to a better outcome. It stretches your thinking, if you will. And hopefully we're going to challenge and stretch your thinking likewise in terms of the overall context. So that's a key driver. I did want to mention, and pardon me if I digress a little bit, but I had the benefit of going to a concert in Montreal last night, a symphony concert. It was a Beethoven violin concerto. I've used music a lot as an analogy for architecture. Many people do. But Beethoven in particular was noted for endlessly reworking his compositions. He was never satisfied with the eventual outcome. The reason I mention that is for us, it's very much an evolutionary process as well. So when you look at the images of the building we're going to show you, think of that as temporarily freezing the evolution. We have to do that to convey to you some sense of where this is going. And it's both a blessing and a curse of computer images that they look more finished than they actually are, but we understand the necessity and the value of showing you those kinds of images and the client, because things have to be on track from this point of view as well. So please bear that in mind. And I can't emphasize enough that this is an evolutionary process. It's still early, and we very much want you to be part of the conversation and how this takes shape. Okay? I know that there was some question on exactly what the definition is of the historic district, so I took this right out of the application, the original application. And I highlighted the language, first of all, that indicates the boundaries of the historic district, which are really the four primary streets. It mentions the east side of Fair Street as kind of a sub-district historically, and I think that was done somehow under a separate application. And then it also mentions that the definition of the boundaries extends to the back property line of whatever fronts on those four streets. So I know the Schiphol letter, which I had the benefit of seeing this week, I do appreciate, Sue, you're forwarding that to Joe and us, makes reference to Fair Street and makes the case for that really being part of the historic context. I do think that's a gray area. But frankly, in our minds, I do think it makes sense, given what this map says, to really consider that as part of what we need to approach from a historic standpoint. So bear in mind, again, that all that's got to be factored by other constraints, like, again, the budget, et cetera. So we're using this, in other words, as kind of a reference point for officially what's considered the historic context versus other elements of the circumstance. Next slide. Excuse me, any questions? Am I off track with what I just said about Mark?
I think you're going to want to double check the city's own definition. I believe the most recent official map came out in 2011.
Okay.
That's why, and it's close to what you've got there, but it's not precisely the same, and we okay. want to be working off the same templates.
Okay. Can someone provide that to us?
Yes.
That would be great. Okay. appreciate that.
And I think that'll work out okay, Mark. I don't see that being a problem, because what I want to talk about now is it's really a multifaceted site. So I'm going to describe an approach, if you think of this as problem solving, and it is part of the architectural or master planning process, really any design process, as a very fundamental problem solving aspect to it. So what I'm going to do is break the problem down into more manageable, more understandable components so you can see how we constructed our thought process for how to approach this. So when I say multifaceted, obviously North Front Street represents a different circumstance that requires different considerations. The second component is what I just said about Fair Street, and I'm granting the fact that that needs probably a little more consideration from an historic standpoint, but it's also transitional for obvious reasons, as it's a link between North Front Street and clearly Schwenk Drive, which is not really historic in terms of the map, nor can you say it's historic unless you have strong feelings about strip mall architecture and that sort of thing. There's really nothing comparable from an historic standpoint about Schwenk Drive context. And as I said earlier, that prevents a very interesting opportunity, if you will. You can call it a dilemma, but I view it as an opportunity for how we approach the problem-solving process. The other aspects of the site are really then the backside of what those three streets create in terms of urban planning. And if you look at Wall Street or typical commercial buildings downtown, they have a facade on the street that's more decorative, obviously a stronger design statement. The other three sides, and I'm oversimplifying, but typically are very simple plain boxes. There's various reasons for that, but the fact of the matter is that it is the precedent, and that is a typical strategy for how buildings are designed. Knowing that we have budget constraints, the approach I'm going to show you takes the position that if Fair Street deserves more consideration, we've already said North Front is a priority, we just said Schwenk is a lesser priority, then it stands to reason that as resources permit, we're going to put more emphasis on Fair Street than we've talked about in the past, and less on the other sides of the project. In other words, Schwenk and the backside of the buildings, if you think of Fair Street as a commercial street like Wall Street or North Front. So what I'm going to show you illustrates that kind of mindset. Again, this is not finished architecture. It's conceptual, but it illustrates where this opportunity can start to take you. Okay?
I'm going to go through the...
So very quickly, I want to walk through the planning fundamentals, the planning chassis, if you will, behind the project, because I think this is very important to understand as a driver for how the whole project is organized. One of the basic challenges, conundrums, whatever you want to call it, that I think everybody is dealing with, whether you recognize it overtly or not, is that by definition, a 420-car parking ramp is totally out of scale with everything about the Stockade District, and frankly, about this edge of Kingston. But that's the fundamental challenge here, is how do we address that need? And I think that's a serious need and a valid need. How do we address that and reconcile that with all the other factors, with all the other contextual challenges this project presents? And much of what we've shown you and much of what we're going to show you tonight, again, reflects that reality, but reflects a different way to handle it aesthetically. So in planning terms, we've highlighted in red public elevator banks. There's one here which connects up to the new plaza and one across the street, which represents handicap access to the bridge across the street. Shippo made a comment about the value of Fair Street being of historic value because of, I think, mid-19th century kinds of activities when there was a railroad yard and I believe a lumber yard in the area. Yeah. I actually like that comment because it gives us something to build on in terms of how we approach the architecture. But I think to say that it has to remain as is for the sake of vehicular and pedestrian traffic is probably short-sighted. And I think what we're trying to do here is separate the two in a way that frankly works better for the city and is a safer circumstance and a more convenient circumstance. And I'll give you an example from the next slide, Joe, if you can show that. Again, we have orange for the housing and the red for the public elevators. We removed the control gates that were shown on the portion of Fair Street that remains. Our assumption is that the parking will be like some of the more current ideas where you simply go and park and you pay at a machine. So I don't see any issues really as far as traffic flow, and this is what I've experienced on recent public parking structures that I've been in, including up in Burlington. So it's a very good circumstance from a traffic management standpoint. So let's suppose that we don't do the plaza. Let's suppose that Fair Street remains as is. What does that mean if you want to do a 420-car parking structure and if you want to accommodate pedestrian traffic in a safe way? I think it creates greater problems. I think it's actually a negative for the city and for the project in that you'll aggravate traffic conflicts for access in and out of the parking structure, both sides of the street, and pedestrian activity if they're using the sidewalk and have no other opportunity to move back and forth. So I view that as a real negative besides the missed opportunity that the plaza presents. So the next slide shows you, again, how the plaza sets up. I think it's important to keep in mind that in terms of the sight lines, the view corridor that Fair Street represents, I don't feel we're changing that at all. I think that, in fact, has been preserved and better framed by the development on both sides of Fair Street. I think the notion of the bluff, if anything, is better articulated. We haven't erased that. We simply articulated it in a better and more clear manner. So I would not agree that, from that standpoint, the project does not pay attention to, nor does it address the importance of those considerations. The presence of the view corridor and the presence, the perception of the bluff or the change in height. So back to circulation. Again, if somebody's coming up the elevator on the Kingston Plaza side of the street and across the bridge, you're crossing at level 3 and you come up a ramp up to the plaza level or level 4. It's all wheelchair accessible. And to me, that's a much more appropriate, safer circumstance in terms of pedestrian traffic back and forth across the site, as well as access to the parking structure. The one gentleman here, I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Yes, you. Pardon? Robert. You made a comment at the last meeting about the corner entry on Schwenken Fair Street. That's really a secondary entry the way the wayfinding circulation sets up here. It's an entry into the lower level of the parking, but we view the main vertical connector as really being at the other intersection up by the plaza as being a more appropriate way to handle whatever pedestrian flow comes in that part of the site. Part of this goes to my experience master planning designing hospitals, which I said are like small cities. And circulation is critical in terms of how you approach those things. So,
yeah, I just want to reiterate one thing that Steve's bringing up, and it can get lost, but there a lot of careful thought went into the idea of this plaza. The cars come in under it, and the people stay on top of it. So separating that traffic, separating those 420 cars, which are going to be coming and going multiple times a day, we hope, which means uptown is vibrant, keep the traffic here and the people up above it, which is a wonderful opportunity to not have that collision, but also create a whole new place. That asphalt that exists in the middle of the road right now can only be enjoyed by cars. And I say enjoyed, if cars enjoy asphalt. But people will be able to enjoy this new gathering place, which is the opportunity that's would be missed if this were to go away.
Okay, next slide, Joe. I was in Quebec City a couple summers ago for the tall ships. If you ever have a chance to do that, I would highly recommend it. It was fabulous. But this is an old Quebec. It's the City Hall Plaza, and it shows, in the case of an old historic city, how they were willing to consider a different kind of design for a public space. Interactive fountain, same opportunity that you're presented with here in Kingston, by making better use of the Fair Street corridor, in our opinion. So to say that there are no precedents, and by the way, I do appreciate Marissa's comments. I think she makes some very good comments. Obviously, I don't agree with everything, and in particular, don't agree that we simply have to follow precedent in terms of what's done here. I think there are many valid precedents to consider when you look at the larger picture as a planning committee. So here's an opportunity. Here's an historic precedent. There are many around the world. I've had a chance to visit many myself, and I think this reinforces the value of the opportunity. Wonderful, wonderful place to spend time. The kids, the families put on a great show when weather permits, and obviously they have a harsher climate than this part of New York State, which I consider the banana belt compared to where I live in Vermont. So again, I think it's a great opportunity. North Front Street, I'll talk about briefly. This is the same slide you saw before. So again, I've talked enough about the benefits of the plaza as a public space. I just think it offers tremendous value, and this is a rare opportunity for the city to create something that adds that kind of value. And again, it reinforces the view corridor. I'm sorry, Joe, go ahead. So we looked at a couple color options. I know, Mark, you said you would provide some information about the hotel. I don't know if that has any color information or not. We're happy to discuss that with whomever as far as what's appropriate. We have a couple different examples just to illustrate the impact of different color palettes on the character of the hotel. We have three different models here, Joe, if you want to go through those. So, again, not saying any of these is our final choice. We're trying to illustrate that this is an exploratory process, and we do value your feedback in terms of what you feel is appropriate. Okay?
I'm just going to go back the room one more time.
No, that's okay. I think that's enough. We can come back to that if we
okay.
need to. So next slide. So this highlights how I view the Fair Street opportunity, because to me it is transitional. It's going from what is really the obvious historic edge on North Front Street to Schwenk Street, which is the obvious non-historic. So right or wrong, it's going to be a transitional kind of zone for the site. So how do we approach that? This is a building where I live in Burlington, where they added on top of an old, beautiful, historic building, converted to the condominiums, and they added a penthouse, which added some additional units. Very successful combination of new architecture with old, done respectively and done appropriately. That's a good illustration of what we have in mind for Fair Street as a transitional kind of approach. There's no precedent for us to literally replicate on Fair other than the side of the Kingstonian, obviously. Nothing on the west side of the street, obviously, since Montgomery Ward's came down, and I know the old parking structure offers no value, let's say, to replicate historically. So I think that's a valid precedent, and I show that to you as an example of what I think can be done. This is a little hard to see, but what we're going to study is, first of all, pulling the cornice down a floor from where we had it before at the very top of the four-story building on Fair Street down to the same level as the majority of the Stockade District, and likewise at the same height as the hotel. I think you can see it looking down this view of the site. So that's altering the scale. What we do at the penthouse level, there's many opportunities, whether we do a French provincial mansard type look or whatever type of approach we look at, whether it's more of a warehouse kind of approach. But there's some great opportunities for how we do that. We modified the balconies because I think balconies have been repeatedly problematic, in that it's not an obvious feature in the Stockade District. So we did the same thing we did on the corner brick building to make that a solid wall with a bunch of openings for the first three levels. On the top penthouse level, it's simply a railing that occurs at the top. So that eliminates the challenge of how do you make balconies, which are frankly not a historic feature, how do you make that more compatible with the precedent, if you will, of the context, okay? Purposely are not showing you a direct view because you haven't had time to develop that more fully. But conceptually, that's the intent. And I do think that's going more in the direction that everyone is going to be more comfortable with. We have to do that likewise, understanding Joe's constraints. What I said earlier about shifting where we spend dollars is where this shows up, on both sides of Fair Street. If we take the approach then that these buildings are like other commercial buildings, it means that we're going to simplify the backside. I think that's okay because my sense is that it's not as critical for the impact and for the context. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. So, again, I mentioned this. I think to me, this is a great precedent for what it creates as an opportunity in our minds. So we know about what was there before Montgomery Ward. Not that that's necessarily a precedent we want to repeat. There's an excellent precedent I'm sure you're all aware of in town, the Lace Mill building, in terms of the scale as a brick building, first of all. And second of all, what I like about it is the live-work scenario, because I think that's one of the big benefits of this project. It's enhancing a live-work kind of circumstance. I talked before about a sustainable lifestyle. To me, there's nothing better you could do for the city than enhance this kind of opportunity, whatever you feel about the type or cost of housing. So anything that continues this kind of mindset to me is essential and excellent. We talked before, when you look at the site section, about how we handled the scope of the project, and I still feel this is essential and valid. It ties into what I showed you earlier as far as circulation, but there's several reasons why the building on the left, in fact, is a separate building. What I'm going to show you articulates that more clearly as a separate building. From a code standpoint, it's separate because we couldn't build the entire facade as one facade on Schwenk if we wanted to out of wood. We couldn't afford it because the code doesn't allow it. Not to bore you with details, but the way code measures height out of wood is you take the average perimeter grade at the bottom and you measure 70 feet to the height of the building or average height of a gable. We would exceed that if we did that as a sheer wall along Schwenk Drive. So that's a practical constraint. But frankly, the design constraint is we'd rather do this anyway for aesthetic reasons. And this shows the impact of wrapping that 420 parking structure with buildings. So we've taken the approach of saying, okay, let's give this a character of an old mill building. Make it look like an old warehouse, whether it was a lumber warehouse precedent, whatever you want to interpret that as a theme, but use that as a conceptual driver for how we approach this part of the site. The upper part then, which is set back 35 feet, again, we treat as more of a warehouse. We're showing you this in brick. There's research to be done to see whether we can actually do this, not only budget-wise, but site-wise, because Joe talked before about the fact that the site is toothpaste. So there's limitations to how we can do that, but we think there's a chance that at a minimum thin brick could work, but I want to be clear that we don't want to overpromise or overcommit. If we can make it work, I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot of materials out there that'll accomplish this look, and we have to do a little bit more research. And if this is the look that the larger group feels we should go with, then we have to research what exact material we can use. But picking up on what Steve was saying, the idea of an industrial building or a warehouse that's been converted to more modern use, I think, is the theme that we've heard, and we're trying to reflect that in the new architecture.
You can see a little bit then about picking up on the theme of Fair Street getting the emphasis. I don't know if you can see the east side of Fair Street on the left side of the image, where we introduce again some of the traditional cornice detail down a floor. The balconies are converted to punch openings. We'll create an aesthetic which looks like a series of individual facades articulating where we have stacked unit types. So I do think there's some authenticity for how that interprets really the architectural chassis, if you will. Showing stone for a base that actually covers, part of the parking structure base on that side of the site, and a three-story building which I think of as like a repurposed loft housing warehouse. One thing I should mention, there's probably another slide, Joe, that shows that better.
It's decided not to change slides on me, so I'm going to have to figure out why. Hang on.
That's a later slide. That's going all the way back.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Okay.
Sorry, technology.
So it's a very different aesthetic, but it responds, again, to some of the comments we heard, and frankly, some of the comments were contradictory. I heard some people say it's not monolithic enough. Others said it's too monolithic. Ironically, we're showing something that does both. It's less monolithic on Fair Street where it matters, more monolithic from Schwenk where it matters, because it's a different circumstance for how you perceive the building. And a simpler articulation makes it easier to perceive and at the same time hide the apparent scale of the building. And it does it in a way that's sympathetic, we think, to the context. Joe skipped ahead to this. Can you go back to the...
That was next.
Okay. All right. So that's next. That's fine. This shows you, I think, from one of the key views from the plaza, the difference visually and the impact of this approach. You can more clearly read the three-story building along Schwenk. The building that's set back beyond is different and reads simply as a warehouse behind the building that fronts on Fair Street. Okay? As far as the pedestrian bridge, we look for some precedents that, quote-unquote, reflect more of Kingston, whatever you think might be appropriate visually for Kingston. So this is a design type for the bridge that we feel fits within the budget, using gusset plates and rivets for the aesthetic, rather than the contemporary kind of expression we had earlier. So when you look at this 3D view, we didn't have time to add the gusset plates and the rivets. Not shown at that level of detail, but simply changing the color and suggesting a different kind of finish on the metal makes the point that we can change the personality of that, like we're changing what we call the liner building on Schwenk to be something that fits in better with the context. Acknowledging that this is Schwenk in the plaza, I still think this goes back to the comment you made, Mark, actually, about how do we create an experience for somebody arriving that's kind of an introductory experience to the Stockade District. So this starts to establish that sort of circumstance, if you will. And there's other ideas, frankly, I have for how we could treat the edge of the pedestrian plaza. I don't know if Joe hasn't heard this yet. I don't know if we could afford to do it, but
that's
frankly...
That's always scary.
What's that?
That's always scary.
I know. It is scary. I'm not trying to scare you. But if you like the idea of interactive fountain, I think water's a wonderful tool for creating a sense of place. I think every community needs a sense of place somewhere. That's like a fundamental human consideration. Water is a great tool for doing that. One thing we can think about, not saying there aren't challenges, but create also a stream which leads to a waterfall over the edges of that offset. To me, that's one way to create movement and even further reinforce the change in height. A waterfall is a fabulous tool for articulating a change in height. I understand there's no literal historic precedent, but as I said before, there are many precedents all over the world, historic settings, that reflect how valuable that kind of approach is. So maybe out of reach, but that's one of the ideas we've been toying with for what could be done here. That would actually frame the entry to the parking below. I wouldn't go so far as to say that should be a car wash and wash the car as you come in or out. But I suppose there's an opportunity for somebody to make money, perhaps. Perhaps not. Last slide. This kind of goes back again to really the core challenge for the Planning Commission, really for everybody, is reconciling the historic agenda with the larger picture. And I said before that the automobile, to me, is the core issue in how you do that. You know, you're trying to accommodate 420 cars. I said before, in other locations, the way they finesse that to preserve, in the case of Italy, historic cities, is they don't allow the cars to come in. They keep them at the perimeter and they make it convenient, but you walk, which is good from a health standpoint. We're trying to do the same thing here. Quebec City does the same thing. If you go to the historic center, the parking's underground. And in a sense, what we're doing here is underground, but not as literal as how they do it there. But that's the kind of thinking I think is important and valuable for how to best approach the circumstance. And we have a concept we think can be successful. Joe has done some initial pro formas that show it can work, but our job is to balance all the constraints for how this plays out. Okay? But I do think that's the essential challenge for the Planning Commission is look at the larger picture, not just simply the historic picture, because there are urban planning considerations which are very important here, and urban planning opportunities. That goes back to what is said about people and cars, and what is said about taking advantage of really the better good. Okay, thanks. Appreciate your time and this opportunity. Frank has some boards that reflect what we just talked about. So happy to discuss whatever you think we need to discuss, answer questions. Joe, you have anything you want to add?
I think you got it for now. Okay.
Hang on. I don't know if I can ask.
Okay.
You want to sit down?
Yeah. Sit down.
We got it.
All right.
I like what you did with the pedestrian bridge. Okay. my thought on that was I was looking to the rail trail bridge I think it's Route 55 that it goes over.
Yep.
That's what I envisioned, and I was thinking that, you know, because the railroad went through there, this kind of pays an homage to that type of industry instead of having the white antiseptic look to it. So that's
Wayne, we looked at that, and if we could afford it, we would. That's got a different geometry on the framing. It's got the diagonal. That's basically custom fabrication. It's way too expensive.
Well, I wasn't saying mirror it, but I know. You know, use some of the same colors and what have you to make this happen.
To make it look more like a railroad bridge. Well, we still have the railroad right below.
Give it a trestle look, you know. That's what I was looking at.
That's our thinking.
Yep.
I think that's especially appropriate in light of the former train station being at the bottom of that hill.
The train station actually where the plaza is now, Kingston Plaza?
It would be back closer to where Aaron Court is, but that general area.
Okay. Good.
Anyone?
I like the look of the industrial, the building down there, the brick building.
Uh-huh.
I really liked your slide of the old and new blend, how the window details were on that. Is there a way that, I mean, I'm sure this isn't the last we'll see of what the details will be, but have you considered doing something like that with the window details on this building?
If we can afford it, yes, but again, I think the priority is Fair Street. Tell me if you disagree, but if we do that, that's really what we have in mind for Fair Street. That's really what that slide was intended to illustrate, because that view fares the transition between the Front Street side and the Schwenk, and sort of combining both for maybe not so obvious, but for valid reasons, and it works. You can see that it works looking at the image.
Yeah. This design in and of itself, quick numbers, is several hundred thousand dollars more than the previous design. And we're going to try to make that work, but when you put a project together like this, there's a lot of drivers. So there's people, and us included, they're very interested in energy efficiency and green building technologies. Well, they all cost money. So there's a trade-off. You can only spend so much per square foot, and you have to figure out where to put it. And so it can't all go into architecture and windows, and it can't all go into green technology, and it can't all go into parking garage, and it can't all go into elevators and waterfalls. There's things that we have to trade on and off in order to keep this project buildable in the Hudson Valley. So it's we want to build a building that we're proud of and that you're all proud of. That's first and foremost. But as was said earlier, not everyone's going to get what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to build a great project, or we're not going to build it at all.
Just when you were referencing the trade-off is to focus more on Fair Street, where on Fair Street are we focusing? The building that's facing the plaza, or the buildings that are facing the Fair Street that's now the entrance to the garage?
The plaza. When Steve was referring to Fair Street, he was referring to Fair Street Extension and the pedestrian plaza.
Okay.
So
Where you originally had the lattice work that was a transition from one building to the other?
Really the whole length.
Correct. So now he's using the entire length as the transition, brought the cornice down, did punched openings the entire length instead of lattice work, abrupt transition.
Now it's more uniform.
It's more uniform.
Good.
Exactly. And more expensive. But given what we know, or what we think we know about where the boundaries to the historic district are, making the transition further back makes more sense.
I want want to add something, a comment again. You made, Mark, about introducing some variety in the entablature and the cornice detail. That's part of what we have in mind, too. All we've modeled here are really two versions for a cornice, but we just haven't had time to study that enough.
Let me see if I can zoom in on it more. I have an image.
But it's a good opportunity, for sure, to do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Fair Street improvements are definitely an improvement, but I think the Schwenk Drive elevation is enormously improved. And I do very much like the fact that you're being sort of more contextual mm-hmm. with the sort of back of an industrial building, which was makes sense with what was there. It also makes a lot of sense with the Senate Garage building. I would like to see perhaps the window openings on the industrial part, if you could make those, instead of two next to each other, maybe one larger and sort of mimic the metal casement windows in the Senate Garage.
Right.
I think that'd be even better.
Yeah, we can consider that, Hayes. Again, as dollars permit, I don't want to overpromise. It may come down to priorities. Do we do that, or we do more on Fair Street to make sure that's right? So there are always choices we'll have to make, but you'll be aware of that as we go through the process.
And we also have to check floor plan, too. This is always a conflict between exterior architecture.
I get you have 50 things you got to work into one building. But
that's an understatement.
Yeah. This is likely a demising wall between two apartments.
Yeah, I get it.
So mulling the window together where there's a wall separating it might prove impossible.
But even
but we'll
if they're variegated and some are larger and some smaller, I think that even adds to the sense that it's actually an old readapted building. The one question I had, I was a little confused on the pedestrian bridge. Is that going to be covered, or it's going to be an uncovered thing,
uncovered.
Just like a
uncovered?
I think that's a massive improvement, also.
Yeah, I believe Wayne said earlier. If you look at the bridge that crosses over Route 55 in Poughkeepsie, this is going to look a lot like that.
I'm just going to ask the question. I'm just throwing it out there, but.
Yep.
Is there a reason for the building along Schwenk Drive, because we keep talking about scale and scope, and obviously the buildings that are up on North Front are much taller. Is there a reason that we're holding to that three-story versus making that industrial building like a four-story on Schwenk Drive? Because I know the other buildings step back, but I'm just not sure what that roof line and I mean.
Well, it's best to look at the section, Joe, if you can pull that up. That kind of explains how that works. We're hiding the edge of the parking structure, and it's also an opportunity, obviously, for what's a single-loaded building, meaning a corridor with units only on one side rather than both sides. Okay.
You're talking about here?
Yep.
Yeah, so that front building went up a story. It'd be in front of the other
Correct.
Apartments.
Right.
Right.
Obviously, that's too wide for
yes.
more apartments.
You need to have windows in each bedroom in order for it to be a legal dwelling unit. And this allows these basically to be apartments. The area that we've squished in the center here, this will be interior storage space that'll be available to the tenants, as well as for the building to function. And so this is a unit facing the courtyard, and this is a unit facing Schwenk Drive. If we were to bring this up a story, we'd essentially create more storage space, but not pick up any more rentable units, and it wouldn't help with the scale. So the idea that, and I really like what Steve did with making this building look like it's two buildings. So it looks now like you have a building here and then a building behind it. If that was up a story higher, it'd be harder. It wouldn't gain us anything except some more storage and take away from the look. But great question.
The other thing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Real quick, the element on the left that's sort of covered in front by trees, I think you could stand to actually do a similar language on the right with the structure on the left and break that facade up. It feels a bit like an afterthought just being covered in trees.
Yeah, we haven't had time to address that. Depends on dollars. And I'm trying not to overpromise, but I can't disagree with what you're saying. You know, and that's why I want to say this is a work in progress. To the extent buildings at front on Fair Street have a street side facade that's a commercial side and a back side that's really the warehouse, whatever side, I'm not sure I would go that far and say that about this side facing Schwenk. I think it deserves a little more consideration, as you're saying. So there's several ways we can do that. We'll just have to see, how we find the right balance. But I would agree with what you're saying.
It's also a different circumstance in that there's no dwelling units here. There's just literally parking behind it in a vertical wall. So whereas here it's stepped back and you have this liner building it built in front of it, it reads as it's a separate building. If we were to just cover this with a more expensive material, I don't know if we gain anything other than a change in color, which we can change color and we can look at it, but the idea was to try to use landscaping and greenery to soften the base of the building. Is that right, Steve?
Yep.
Well, it's not so much just a material change. I wouldn't suggest to just kind of wallpaper it with brick, but mm-hmm. if you even, again, did that same response where you stepped the building backwards, then you have that material change very specifically, and it's intentional.
If we did that, we'd lose several units. If we brought it back, see, the way the site lays out, this is deeper than this side. So it allows us to step it back. If we did that here, we'd probably give away, I don't know, 16 to 20 apartments, and that would hurt the economics of trying to pay for the parking structure. So there's that.
Joe, could you pull up level 4, if you don't mind, elaborate a bit more on that, because we actually looked at that and thought about it. But there is some room on the back side. I call it the Brad side of the site because it's convenient. But picking up on what you said, we thought about taking units off the top of that end of the building and moving them to the back side of the Brad side of the site. There's a little bit of room to do that. We haven't studied it, but that would do, I think, what you're saying. It would lower step the volume in the same way at that end. It wouldn't seem quite so sheer without losing units for Joe. But it's going to take some time to explore that. But I think it's possible to do that. And they would do the same on the backside. You'd have a smaller volume to transition into the taller backside of the building. It may have to be a little wing that, you know, just simply looks like more warehouse, but that's okay. You know, we can still treat the lower scaled end like we're treating what we call the liner building or the brick warehouse on Schwenk. So it's a good observation. So we'll see. Other questions, comments?
The water element?
Water element? You mean
the
interactive
planning
fountain?
For the plaza. I'm intrigued by it. I think it could be done really well. I would suggest, rather than a waterfall, you consider a flowing stream indicating the declivity that we're water flowing downhill, and that would allow you a simpler way to the sound, the steady, inviting nature of water on one side or the other, or however you wanted to do it. My vision has less to, I mean, I'm trying really hard to come up with one that's local. The one that comes to mind is the Gardens of the Generalife in Granada, but I don't think you want to go to Moorish architecture here.
No.
What do you think of the fountain idea? Do you think we should keep it?
I know that it is an open invitation, and there's nothing exactly like it. The closest thing we had is the now defunct fountain in Academy Green, which is much more ornate than this. But the idea of water creating an attraction and a public space is something that Kingston has been used to in the past. I'm not wedded to this linear design, but I'm sure you can make it fit the plaza with, I leave this up to someone with a better artistic eye than mine.
Yeah.
I will say that I think the water feature is a good feature for the project. I think any large metropolitan area that you go to, there's a water feature, and ironically, everybody congregates around it, whether it be cafe tables or benches or whatever they do. I know just from my own personal flipping through Kingston historical books, we had fountains all over Kingston back at the turn of the century, and it was a meeting place. So I think uptown Kingston, the way that the streets are designed right now, it is hard for pedestrians, especially with the canopies, to meet and congregate, and I think by having some type of a water feature, that will attract people to this project and to that pedestrian way to have some type of that of a meeting a space. Honestly, a few weeks ago, I was at a doctor's office down in Oakwood, which is nothing more than just square boxes, buildings. But when you walk into the building and the fountain's in use and a few nurses are sitting there chatting, having their morning coffee, it was very relaxing, and it was just a nice space to walk through.
Sure. I guess a question that we'll want to work with different city officials and groups on is, does an interactive fountain make sense? Is it better to be a decorative fountain, as you're talking about, that existed where people congregated around it, heard it, listened, saw it, but didn't necessarily get in it? That's a question. That's a fundamental thing to think about. Is getting in it important or looking at it more important?
I think it's a nice-to-have thing, but I think given the winter weather here, a large portion of the year, I would rather see you invest the money in better fenestration, better windows, and the brick than that. Great thing to have, but I'd rather... I think the details in the facade are more important.
It's a fair comment.
Another way to look at it would be to hearken back to the facts of the old well that served the stockade starting in the 1600s. Mm-hmm. Very simple bluestone square round hole in the middle, but some echo of that might be a simpler way to provide a water feature.
Well, so I'll give you a couple examples because... Again, I think of this as it would be a missed opportunity. I said we were in Montreal last night before the concert outside the Place des Arts. We sat by the plaza. Guess what? It had a water feature exactly like this. We sat there for almost an hour just enjoying the fountain, watching the change in the dynamic, the change in the lighting, and the way children and people interacted with it. So... it's a very different dimension from simply a fountain. Where I live in Burlington, City Hall Park, Kevin Roche isn't here tonight, but he made a comment to me after the last meeting about how much he likes Burlington. Church Street, which closed the downtown Main Street, by the way, something I'm hoping you consider into a pedestrian mall. Did it in the late 80s. It's won all kinds of awards for urban space. But next to the City Hall, they're renovating the plaza. They're taking out a more static-type fountain. It was a stone, round fountain with, I'll say, a rather boring water expression, if you will, replacing it with an interactive fountain. It's under construction now. There are people that objected to the project more because of trees that were coming out that had to come out, even though we're planting more trees than were there to begin with. Should be completed, hopefully, late fall this year, but those are also much colder climates. So if Montreal, Quebec City, and Burlington could do it, I don't see it from a weather climate standpoint certainly being a problem for Kingston. But your point's well taken, Hayes. Something to think about.
And that's something that could be determined during the site plan approval process. You know, picking the exact fountain right now doesn't change the seeker proceeding, but the feedback is important for us to gather so that we know a direction to go and research. And Patrick just sent me this picture just to show you. This is in Poughkeepsie. So this is on the top of a parking garage at the Culinary Institute. It's not to say that we want this fountain. It's just to show this on top of a concrete structure with parking underneath could actually be built.
All right. Can you go to slide 11? I know you're showing three different view, options on this view. Can you speak to that? What's your thought process?
Sure. So we're open is the short answer of what colors this should be. I think all of them articulate a very similar material. It's really just a change in color. There's a little bit difference in the size of the exposure, I think, on one of the clapboard sightings. But we're also going to be working with Benjamin Moore to try to see what were historic colors. We have no idea what color this building was. The only photographs are black and white, and we have no written record that we can find of what color it was. So that doesn't mean we needed to copy whatever it was, but we need to find out, we need to agree on what color it should be. And so we're going to present several options and ideas, and we had time to do a few of them. All the same scale, just, you know, you can see this is a larger exposure. And different color schemes. So, Steve, do you want to describe the thinking, or is it we're just really presenting other options?
Again, demonstrates how powerful color is as a tool. And I think at the end of the day, we'll defer to whatever you can find in the historic record for what the colors were. I think that's going to be difficult. So having said that, we'll just come back to from an aesthetic standpoint and historic precedent standpoint for the Stockade District, what you feel is appropriate. Maybe look at other examples of the same vintage building and see how color was handled in some of those clapboard residential structures. Probably I don't think there's much in the way of commercial that is like this. So that may be a good place to start for precedent as far as color, even though we can't find specifically what was done here.
Is there one that, I mean, I don't know if we want to do a show of hands. Is there, not that it has to be that exact scheme, but is there one that you would rule out and say, go more in this direction and we can do variations of that?
Wow.
I mean, we have one, two, or three at this point, and we can take one, two, or three and do variations of it and then come back with some more options. They're all pretty different. So you have a lighter siding, a cream, white, gray, white windows, gray windows, red windows, and there can be a mix of any variation thereof.
My thought is that the color scheme of the building immediately next to it is black and white. I would not want to see that replicated.
Right.
I think you would want to have some contrast. Of the colors that you're showing, the idea of carrying a color scheme so that...
Yeah, the gray with the gray, that was...
Right, that's one possibility with yourself, or the red on the other side of the street. That also directly across from you is the Senate Garage,
mm-hmm.
So that either of these would be picking up on context. I always defer on colors to other folks with a more artistic eye than mine, but of what you've shown, one or two would be more appealing to me than three.
Okay. Anyone else have an opinion?
The only question that I have, and just from a planning board member standpoint, we've heard a lot of comments that have come in, and I've had people that have approached me, and this really isn't my forte, but I feel like we're trying really hard to replicate something, and I know the SHPO letter came in, and they really didn't comment too much on this as having much, I guess, appeal or effect. But we've had projects from the planning board that have come through where SHPO has said that they don't want us replicating history. And I feel like this building, just the way that the porch is in the front and the soffits are, that we're trying to recreate this old hotel. And I know we've had other projects in the city where we tried to recreate things and it's backfired. So since we have new design and new, more modern designs to the left and in the back and on Schwenk Drive and an industrial building, is this color scheme and this type of detail on this porch across, is this gonna go? And I kind of defer to the historic boards because I don't...
There's one...
I mean, I just don't know if we're... I mean, I'm okay with the box, but I don't know if the outside, if we're... It just, I don't know of any architecture uptown where this matches. And SHPO really didn't
there's a,
give
there's
us
a million
guidance.
Dollars for us to do it like this. We want a grant to do this. So if we don't do it similar to this, it hurts the economics of the project severely.
And that was just to do it in that?
Colors to be determined, but in this type of
and
look.
And that wall went through SHPO.
It went through, it's a state grant.
State grant.
So
okay.
It went through SHPO. I don't know, there's a lot of people in SHPO. I'm not sure
who
in SHPO sat on the committee that approved the historic tax credit grant that we got, but this is a historic grant.
So it has to mimic the footprint and the and the facade of the old building as much as
possible. To a point. I mean, it has to have – it can't be confused, so we have to have a different keystone that will say 2021, so no one would think that this is the historic building. But it has to pay homage to it with detail and scale and size, and otherwise we violate the grant, we lose $1 million, and we don't do the project. Oh, yeah, we can have several color render. We're just looking for feedback. Right, right.
Now, yeah. With your original building, because I know your original building was brick facade, is there anything behind that brick?
This was the original building.
The original building was wood, then they put brick on top.
Right.
So as you start to deconstruct this building, are you going to get back to what this original wood
was?
There's
nothing
long gone
behind it.
Oh, there's nothing behind it. Okay.
These columns are probably the only thing other than the roof structure that's still actually there.
Okay.
Buried in a wall, exactly. So we want to pull these columns out and actually reuse them where you see the columns on the future building. The building is similar in height, et cetera. The walls have moved a little bit. The windows have changed a little bit. The cornice work is going to be redone similarly. But if we took the brick off, there's nothing there. It's just brick.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so unfortunately, we went through this discussion. There was no way to save the existing building from a structural point of view.
I just didn't know if there was evidence behind
the brick. No, there's no evidence. These columns are the evidence. We found it. but nothing else that we can really take out and save. And these are painted, by the way. They do have some red paint on them. So the red didn't come out of nowhere, but we don't know when that red paint was put on.
I would just like to say the gray was my least favorite.
Which gray?
The new, the third one? The third option.
I kind of agree with you. We didn't get to see this much. We saw it today, but we agree. This was our least favorite.
That's my least favorite.
Agree.
I like the cleanliness of this one, but
I
think
too.
The red is the most interesting to me. It kind of, you have a lot of brick color interspersed,
mm-hmm.
especially now, even though this doesn't face swank, it kind of ties that in for me. So if you're asking us to pick, this one would be my preference.
Okay.
Actually, the red is toned down from the original. It's more of a rust reddish brown. That's one of the differences.
Yeah, I wouldn't
want to
see like a candy apple red or anything.
Right.
Like
that was
that.
The original.
Yeah. Candy apples, probably
term. That would be not good red.
That's the brighter red that was originally there.
Yeah.
That's the one that I've had issue with because it's just so
right. And oops, I'm sorry. And then this is
the columns.
Right, this is the toned down red.
That to me is better.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I want to speak to that too. I think I wrote down that color number one was my favorite. I love this whole view. The back, I love the brick building. I agree. I took the same note about the windows that Hayes was talking about on that, and I understand the money parameter of that. I still struggle a little bit with the blue and the gray of the building on Schwenk Drive. I'm embracing this a lot more, and then when you come around to the other side, everything they're saying makes sense, and the trees and the green space.
You're talking about the blue in...
The blue and the gray on the back. Again, that's just personal preference. I love this so much better, but the back I struggle with. It feels so medical to me.
We haven't touched the back. That's going to change. So
that I like. Yeah, I like the grays are better with the brick. There's one that you have blue on. I'm not a fan of that. But
the blue in here?
It just feels medical to me and not Kingston. Uptown or... And I understand that...
Right.
The historic on one side and everything they're saying makes a lot of sense. That's just for the 2 cents worth aesthetically. The blue I struggle with and the kind of medical feel of what I saw before. But I like the brick on the bottom and I like the trestle. But number one was my favorite. That's my 2 cents worth on the color.
You're hired as a color consultant, if that's okay.
Closer to the color of your sweater.
Yeah. As you pull that photo in, I see corrugations appear on the outside of the. Is that just an aspect of the computer program? Or
no,
is it,
that's going to be actual corrugations on the building. It's a vertical treatment, like a board and batten kind of, Steve, or no?
Yep. Board and batten. It could be metal panel, which fits an industrial warehouse type aesthetic. So we'll see, but it's also something that introduces some scale to it, not just a flat, you know, monolithic facade.
Well, I'm only aware of one board and batten structure in the historic district. It's at 124 Green Street.
Yeah.
The Thomas Edison visited here house. Hmm.
What's the reasoning behind the lines on this going vertical instead of horizontal?
Pardon? Board and batten? It's a more commercial aesthetic, less of a residential. You know, clapboard, to me, is a stronger residential kind of aesthetic. To me, these are, even though it's multifamily housing, I think it needs to have a more commercial kind of aesthetic for the cladding on it because of the context and because it's not single family. So that's just kind of our instinct.
I think it all ties in with the theme of the story that we're trying to tell of an old building that's been converted. And if it was horizontal, which is quite frankly easier to do, I don't know if we'd accomplish that. But we can certainly draw a version of this in the computer with horizontal siding. I'm not an architect. I'm struggling with the right word. But I think it'll conflict with what we're trying to accomplish with the direction of punched openings in a converted industrial lumberyard looking warehouse building.
But this is interesting. These are exactly the sorts of things we want to hear about and discuss with you, okay? Because this is all part of the evolution. We want you to be invested in the process and, frankly, take some ownership of the outcome because that's we like that, but frankly, that's how it should be anyway. So we understand how important this project is for really everybody. So I just want to make sure it's clear. I think it is. But we hear what you're saying. We want to continue to have a dialogue. And this means as much to us as I think it does to everybody in the community. So we all want a success.
I'm really happy with what Steve did here by bringing the cornices down. I agree. We can change this blue out to a different color. But just the way I feel like we're in Kingston when I see that. And I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but
I agree with that.
Yeah, the cornices are a real feature of most of the district, and so I'm happy to discuss that at our meeting as well. So thank you for that. The other thing that I'm struggling with still in your design, this is going to now become a welcome to Uptown Kingston. This is going to be a major vehicular and foot traffic access to the historic district that it's been a minor one sort of up till now, and we're really directing a lot more people to it, and I'm hoping that with the plaza you can strengthen that sense of entryway. And I think that would be an opportunity I haven't heard you focus on yet. And I would be happy to see that.
I agree. The plaza design in and of itself is its own subset of work. I mean, the getting past this stage, which is seeker, are we doing this project? Is this the right project for here? Is the first step. The next step will be detailing this out and working with several iterations, as we're doing with the architecture now, to lay out exactly how this plaza functions and operates. But this walkway and this entry and then the ramp up, that starts to tell the story. And then along the way, there can be literally cues, signage, changes in materials, things that give you a feeling that I'm walking into the historic district from the plaza.
I agree. It's an excellent opportunity for welcoming people to what makes Kingston a little different than any other place on the planet.
So there's a couple opportunities, Mark. First of all, you have to recognize how people arrive. The majority, I think, are going to be coming by car. So by definition, that's not, an historic, let's say, way to arrive. But I think there's an opportunity with that approach coming up Fair Street for how we design the entry, if you will, to the space below. That's why we have the skylight. I don't want it to be a dark hole.
Right here.
I want the light to come down as a backdrop. That backdrop is an opportunity for something maybe a commission, an artist or something to do something as some sort of, I don't know, a story that maybe you want to tell about Kingston, whether it's site-specific or more general, but there's an opportunity. The way we designed that entry, you know, needs careful study because it should be more than just entering a parking garage. But that's one aspect of the arrival, and frankly, it's going to be the more common. The other, of course, again, is what we're saying about the pedestrian bridge. There may be some way as you walk along that to likewise tell some sort of story because not all of that is going to be storefront or commercial. There'll be some blank wall opportunities there on one side.
In here.
And I did want to note that what you're showing for the wall along Schwenk Drive, I'm glad to see it's not just a flat concrete wall. I think that the stone...
Old stone base, yeah.
Yeah, is a chance to highlight what they're walking into. No one can expect you to recreate Dutch-era colonial stonework, but something that calls to it the way this does more than what you've presented before is an improvement that I'm happy to see.
Okay, good. Appreciate the comments. Other thoughts, comments?
Do any of the other... Go ahead. No, I was going to ask if any of the other team members wanted to...
They're shy.
Okay, that's good.
When you appeared before us, you had Joe Diamond with the archaeological information. That's something that's particularly important on this site and not one that I know the planning board typically gets into. Is he going to be making a presentation as part of the seeker review before the planning board as well?
He submitted his recommendations, and we spoke about that at the last planning board meeting. So basically, there are certain areas on the site that are important to explore further, and we will be doing that. That's the gist of it. We don't know what's left down there because it's been built on twice before, but as part of our initial construction phase, we will be exploring that. And Joe will be there as we dig to identify any and all artifacts that are worthy of preservation. So that's a commitment that we will make. It'll be part of the hopeful negative declaration that this board will write, and you will decree us to do that, and we will do it. So there's not much more of a presentation he can make other than to say, this is a sensitive area, and we need to look at it further. But digging up the parking lot now, before we know if we have a project or not, doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Okay.
I've been meaning to mention that it would be great, from my point of view, to leave the plaza open enough to see the mountains behind it. I don't want anything blocking those mountains.
And that's a great comment because it'll talk about how we lay out trees. So instead of having a tree in the center, we can push that to the side. And I completely agree with you. One of the reasons we got rid of the glass atrium was to continue to preserve that view shed through there. And by laying out the plaza in a thoughtful way with a goal of keeping that view shed in mind, then we need trees, but the trees can be justified to both the right and the left and then to keep the center more open for a view shed. I think that's a great comment. We're fully on board with it. There will be a landscape architect that's going to do this design with us. It's just too early. The idea of are we doing a plaza? Are we doing a bridge? Is this project happening? That's what we're getting to. If the answer to all that is yes, we pull the trigger on the next round of design, which will be part of the site plan approval.
Anybody else have any comments or questions? Steve, thank you for not taking too much offense at. I think we butchered your original design up there.
Well, I don't have any more hair to lose like you, Wayne. So, not a problem.
To that, it wasn't. It's not offense. We needed direction.
And I know.
And part
that.
Of the direction we got in the beginning was spend your attention on North Front Street. Don't worry about the back. Break the back up into a whole lot of little buildings. Okay, that's what we did. Then we got more clarity around a direction. And we changed it.
It's healthy. It's a healthy discussion. That's how it should be.
And it's give and take on both sides, right? I mean, I might have missed it along the way, you know, from when you first started talking about this project, why the Kingstonian, you know, that one building had to remain as it is. I didn't know that funding, you know, was part of that issue till tonight. So
in order to pull this project off, we needed a lot of funding streams.
Yeah.
And the DRI funding some of the public amenities, meaning the walkway and plaza, the historic tax credits funding the rebuilding of the hotel. And that, quite frankly, that's one of the reasons why there's a hotel. It'd be easier to make more apartments, but the hotel rooms are needed as well, with a Senate garage across the street. So it all kind of comes together when you find a funding stream that matches one of the goals of the project. So, yeah.
As you get down to the site planning and stuff, though, given the budgetary constraints, as you face those, it would be very helpful for us to understand, you know, what you're looking at trading off this for this,
yep,
so that we can give some insight into, you know, collectively, we'd rather see you focus on this investment than this.
And you did some of that tonight, which we appreciate, with smaller fountain, more architecture, makes sense. It's an iteration, as Steve says, and I've learned this from him working with him on several projects now. You don't just say, here's the design, go build it, or go get it approved. It has to iterate, and you have to... It's a lot of work, but you end up with a better project. And I think from where we started out 2.5 years ago to now, I think you'd all agree is significantly improved.
Yes.
And, you know, all three groups don't get together that often. I think this is the second time we've had such a meeting since I've been involved with the planning board. I think it's wonderful that, you know, we're able to do this and have you just make one presentation so we're not playing the telephone game. Well, he said this at my meeting and he said this at my meeting. So I think it's great that, you know, the applicants can share their thoughts and what their plans are with as many interested agencies as possible. So I thank everybody from all three boards who were able to make it here tonight for that. I think we're one step closer to the end game here. Mm-hmm. We have a little ways to go, you know, I want to thank you for sharing this tonight with us. And does anybody have any other questions at all right now?
I just want to ask if you can forward to our department the full presentation so we can upload it to the website.
Sure. I sent the images right before we came, but not the full presentation, so we can certainly do that. I just had a couple questions, I guess, for you guys. One of which is maybe more of a housekeeping matter. We talked a little bit about the traffic. Is there?
Well, we.
I know that was an issue that was outstanding 2 weeks ago.
There's a an invoice now has been prepared. We have a firm that we've contracted out with, and they're aware that we need to have this done in an accelerated manner. So that's in the works right now. That's already been done. So.
Okay, so the third party firm was hired to review the study that we did. Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
In terms of what more you need from us in order to give us your recommendations, and maybe Mike can speak to this, because Mike's done more seeker projects than me by 100. What more do we need to present to you in order for you to give us in writing the direction? I mean, we know we're not coming at the end of seeker with a finished building. We will have the finished building at the site plan approval, which we're going to go right into. But what more do you need to feel comfortable to say this building and this development, as Steve said, it's not just a building, this development meets your satisfaction?
I think at this point, what we're just waiting on the traffic review of the work that Creighton Manning provided.
And I mean, and also we have, you know, we do have that letter from SHPO. They want us to be, you know, involved and back and forth with them. And
we'll send them these pictures.
They're going to send them these pictures and what we've talked about tonight, and see what they have to say. You know, so
We'll write a formal letter responding to their comments and how we think that this new design goes along with what they had to say for the most part.
Right.
Not in every way, because again, the one thing we fundamentally disagree on is needing to keep Fair Street Extension open. I mean, imagine if that was open, you'd be staring at the side of a parking garage and there'd be no pedestrian plaza and there'd be no businesses there on the pedestrian plaza. It'd be, and the people would be interacting with the cars that are coming in and out of the garage. I don't think they gave that enough thought. And I think if we were to go with that recommendation, that's the one that I disagree with mostly, we'd be missing a big opportunity for Kingston. We'd save money, but we miss a big opportunity.
So I think those are the, that's it, right? I mean, yep. Yeah. I don't know if Mike, does Mike have, you have anything to say, Mike? Or take a mic, Mike.
The only thing I was going to ask was with respect to Seeker, at the last planning board meeting, we had suggested that we would fill out a part two of the EAF and submit it to the board. There was some discussion about that and never really a resolution about that. Does the board have a preference for us to do that or not do it? I mean, I would think that would be the next step now. With respect to SHPO, that issue with the letter is still certainly open from a Seeker standpoint, so that this board, as the planning board probably knows, but just to elaborate on it, it's a coordinated review process that's going on now, so the planning board is the lead agency. It must make its own environmental findings, even with regard to the SHPO issues. So those issues have to be made public, and they have to be made by the planning board during the pendency of the Seeker review. And part of the part two has a specific list of questions that address the SHPO issues and the historic issues and cultural
right.
resources.
As I had stated at the last meeting of the planning board, I don't have any objection. I don't know about the other planning board members to you drafting.
Yeah, and it would be a draft with suggested answers. The board absolutely has to do their own.
We will review it thoroughly and potentially make whatever changes we deem appropriate.
If that's okay, we'll get that in a draft form.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
That's good with me. I'm not in charge, though.
All right. So all three boards are going to have to table this matter. We're going to start with planning board here. At this time, I'll make a motion that we table items number 2 and 3. Do I have a second? Second by Robert Jacobson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
I do. Do you have a quorum?
I think so.
We do. All right. So on behalf of Historic Landmark Preservation Commission, I move that we table further consideration of the Kingstonian project as listed as items number 2 and 3 on the on our joint agenda tonight. Do I hear a second? Thank you, Andrea. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous passage.
Heritage, you want to? Yeah, do you have to? Okay. Okay, I hear you. All right. Before we close out here, I just want to let you know that Planning Board is going to be getting in contact with you to arrange a special meeting in October. Okay? We'll continue on that. So anyway, that's the end to that. Thank you very much, folks.
Do we need to do a high five?